Welcome to day 194 of the story that changes everything. Our readings for today are Isaiah chapters 34 through 36. Here's some thoughts to guide your reading for today. Chapters 34 and 35 belong together and are mirror images of one another. Chapter 34 is an oracle of judgment against Edom, announcing that Edom will be turned into a wasteland. On the flip side, chapter 35 announces that the barren wilderness of Judah, which has suffered under the oppression and exile imposed upon it, it will be transformed into a flourishing garden. It's not clear in the text why Edom is named. Like Babylon before it, Edom is certainly meant as a foil in the chapter, representing all the nations that are oppressive and fail to follow the ways of God. Some scholars believe that Edom is used because it assisted Babylon in conquering Jerusalem in 587 BC. But it is clear in the chapter that the people of Judah want justice and even revenge for how they were treated by Edom and other nations earlier, and they imagine and trust that God will bring about his judgment upon them. The word pictures in the chapter imagine a place of flourishing becoming something like, in our modern day, something like Chernobyl, a nuclear disaster where everything is ruined and deserted, and becomes a complete wasteland that's uninhabitable by humans and just overrun with wild beasts. In verse 14, the name Lilith is mentioned. This is the only reference to that name in the Bible. She is, however, well known in Jewish literature as a demon-like figure who flies around and steals children. The symbolic point is that after God's judgment, Edom, which used to be a place of flourishing and a place people desired to live in, will now become a wasteland filled with every form of threat and evil and terror. Chapter 35 reverses the curse. What's described as the desert, the dry land, and the wilderness will now rejoice because the newness of God will come. This reversal will not only affect the natural creation, but will change God's people themselves. The eyes of the blind will be opened, and the ears of the deaf will be cleared. Then the lame will leap like a deer, and the tongue of the speechless will sing. It's easy to see in these verses, verses 5 and 6, hints of the way the ministry of Jesus later fills full these expectations of newness and the healing breaking into the world, these hopes that Isaiah articulated. Both chapters 35 and chapter 40 will describe a kind of road or highway out of the wilderness. This chapter pictures that road almost like a carpet that will be unfurled in the wilderness, becoming a safe path for the scattered exiles of Judah to return home to Jerusalem, celebrating and with everlasting joy upon their heads. Chapters 36 through 39, the last four chapters in what we might refer to as First Isaiah, or this first major section of Isaiah, they return to telling the story of Isaiah's connection to the kingship of both Ahaz and Hezekiah, this time with Hezekiah. The historical event behind the narrative is likely the incursion of Assyria upon Jerusalem in 701 BC. Our chapter for today, chapter 36, opens with the words of the messenger Sennacherib sent to the people of Jerusalem. Between you and me, it's one of my favorite trash-talking texts in the entire Bible, and the events here remind me of a scene out of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where King Arthur and his knights are trash-talked by a particularly crass Frenchman on the top of the castle fortress walls. I think you can picture that scene if you know the film. The messenger begins by making fun of Judah's potential alliance with Egypt. "Egypt's no help," he declares. "Instead of helping Judah, Egypt will actually hurt them." Of course, the messenger doesn't know that the prophetic word of Isaiah has already warned the people that making such an alliance with Egypt would be fruitless, unhelpful, and show a lack of faith. But in humorous ways, the messenger reveals his lack of knowledge related to Judah's faith. He wonders if perhaps Yahweh has abandoned Judah because Hezekiah tore down the high places of worship, not realizing that those high places of worship were actually places of idolatry despised by God and commanded that Hezekiah tear them down. He even infers that he's been sent by God as an agent of vengeance upon Judah. One thing the Assyrian does, however, understand is Judah's weak military standing. He mocks them and belittles them by offering them 2,000 horses, while knowing full well that Judah doesn't even have enough soldiers to ride them, even if he gave them to them. I love that the Judean leaders, Eliakim, Shebna, and Joah, ask the messenger if he might speak in Aramaic rather than Hebrew. His threats in Hebrew are stirring up the concerns of the common people in Judah, but that's exactly his purpose. He's giving them propaganda that will cause great fear among them. So he just keeps speaking in Hebrew. The Assyrian offers those who are afraid of the invasion to come, rightly, an opportunity to be relocated, to surrender, and be sent into another land that's fruitful. And he declares that Yahweh will be defeated just like the gods of all the other nations that Assyria has conquered. And this is where the messenger makes his primary mistake. He fails to understand the significance of the particular land where the people live, a land promised to them by God. And he unwisely puts Yahweh on the same level with all the other gods of the nations. Those two errors in speech and judgment will end up being corrected by the hand of God. As I'm working on this text today, I find myself facing certain fears in this moment. I don't have an Assyrian messenger yelling threats at me from my driveway, thank goodness, but I can still sense my fears about my future of my children, the future of the congregation I pastor, and the future of the church, the denomination, and the global church, those people I think of as my people. And like Hezekiah commands his emissaries, there are times when we need to not fuel those fears, but like Hezekiah commanded his servants, stay silent and trust that God knows those threats and hears those threats and is able to deliver us even from our deepest fears. So read these texts carefully today and journal your thoughts and even offer your fears to God. And trust today that God knows and hears and is able to act on your behalf. We find out what happens tomorrow when we read the next three chapters, Isaiah chapters 37 through 39. That's what we're reading, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.